Christ is risen. We've been saying that for 6 weeks now, since Easter Sunday. And if you're like me, it feels like Easter Sunday is a distant memory. It kind of is. 6 weeks is a long time, and here we are, the sixth Sunday of the season of Easter, and yet still we are proclaiming that Christ is risen, because it is no less true today than it was 6 weeks ago. It's no less true today that Christ is risen than it was on Easter Sunday when we gathered here, and there were a few more people here on that Sunday than there are today, and we had Easter lilies, and we had brass, and we had all kinds of the best, loudest, most celebratory music we could find. Well, it's still no less true that Christ is risen today than it was on Easter Sunday. In fact, it's true every day, 365 days a year, that Christ is risen, and that changes everything. That's what we've been talking about for the past 6 weeks, that Easter, resurrection is a new creation, and Easter changes everything. And so we're going to continue that today because it is so true. Resurrection, Easter, changes everything. Resurrection means that death has been defeated. You know, we think about the fact that God created us, mind, body, and spirit, created us whole beings, and death means that those are fractured from each other and that our physical bodies die and are put in the ground. Resurrection means that God will not let death have the last word, even over our physical bodies, that we believe through the resurrection of Jesus that we also one day will be raised and we'll be like Him. And so death means that death has been defeated. It means that God is not going to abandon this creation. The entire creation is not going to be abandoned. God is going to redeem creation. It means that, as we looked at 1 John 4 last week, Easter means that we can trust love, the power of love. We can trust the fact that love wins. And today we're going to continue from 1 John 4. We're going to move into 1 John chapter 5, and it'll be a continuation of that theme that love wins. There is victory in love, the love of Christ, and in the resurrection. So I'll pick up this morning, 1 John chapter 5. We'll begin reading at verse 1. Everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been born of God, and everyone who loves the parent loves the child. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and obey His commandments. For the love of God is this, that we obey His commandments. And His commandments are not burdensome, for whatever is born of God conquers the world. And this is the victory that conquers the world, our faith. Who is it that conquers the world but the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? This is the one who came by water and blood, Jesus Christ, not with the water only, but with the water and the blood. And the Spirit is the one that testifies, for the Spirit is the truth. The Word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Well, here's how I'd like for you to help me out this morning. I'd like for you to turn to a person or two around you and deliver this message. The message is, it can't be stopped. Can you do that for me? It can't be stopped. It can't be stopped. Every week I receive emails and I read articles where more and more people are predicting doomsday for the church. And when I say church, I mean church big C. I don't mean just Advent, I mean the church, the church worldwide, whether it's Presbyterian or Episcopalian or Catholic or Baptist. I'm talking about the church. And more and more, there are more commentators and more church experts who are declaring and predicting that it's sort of a doomsday for the church. There are articles with all kinds of titles like why the millennial generation is leaving church, or why the baby boomers are leaving church, or why generation X, Y, or Z is leaving church. All these people who are trying to figure out why the church isn't reaching certain segments of our population. And then there are other articles that are predicting a coming death tsunami. That's what one church expert calls it. He says there's going to be, between 2019 and 2050, there's going to be a death tsunami that doesn't just hit the church, it hits our culture. As baby boomers, the death rate among the American population goes up by 50%. And what his prediction is that's going to have devastating effects for the church. For all churches, but particularly for those churches who haven't been successful at reaching out to young people, to younger generations. And honestly, that's most churches. It's not true for Advent, but it's true for most churches. We haven't been all that effective in reaching younger people. And so there's all these predictions about why, or all these articles about why millennials are leaving or why baby boomers are leaving. And then there's these predictions about the death tsunami. And then there's some articles that talk about the exponential growth of secularism and atheism and how our culture is becoming more and more antagonistic to the church. All of these articles, and then some articles predicting that churches in the United States within a decade will be just as empty as churches in Europe. And if you've been to Europe, you know that church buildings have sort of become tourist attractions instead of places of vibrant worship because people are absent. And the prediction is that that's going to happen in the United States within the next decade. Now, I don't know if you read those kind of articles or not. Maybe it's just me because I'm a church nerd, but they're all, if you look, there are articles like that everywhere. There's all this doom and gloom and church experts running around like Chicken Little saying the sky is falling. And there is some truth in those articles. It is true that young people are leaving the church, and we're having a hard time getting young people to come back. It is true that there is a growing animosity in our culture toward the church, much of it brought on by the fact that by how unlike Jesus many of Jesus' followers are. And we've kind of brought some of that animosity on ourselves. And it is true that baby boomer generation is going to start to experience decline in numbers, and that will affect the church in the United States. But still, I'm not quite ready to panic just yet. I'm not quite ready to give up on this thing called church. I'm not ready to declare this a sinking ship that maybe we just should all abandon. And the reason that I am still optimistic about the future of the church, in order to really get at that, to know why we should have hope in the future, we have to take a look back at our past. So I want you to imagine with me for just a minute. Let's imagine that we're back in the very beginning of the Jesus movement. Let's imagine that we're some of Jesus' first followers, and we're living in the Roman Empire. Now, at first, the Roman government, the empire, really doesn't pay much attention to us because we're just a small group of people and we don't really have much power or influence and we haven't made very many waves. But over time, after the resurrection of Jesus, this group of disciples starts to grow. And the message of Jesus' resurrection and his love and the ways that God is at work in the world, that message starts to be passed on from person to person. And these followers of Jesus are multiplying and they start to build some momentum. And pretty soon, we're starting to gain the attention of the powers that be. So much so that by 64 AD, there's enough of us, and we've created enough of a stir, that when the Roman Emperor Nero decides to burn the city of Rome, and he's looking for a scapegoat, he's looking for somebody to pin this arson on, he looks no further than these Jesus followers. So he set this fire, and then he blames it on Christians, and all of a sudden there's this huge persecution of Christians, and Christians start to be fed to lions and start to be burned and crucified upside down, and we come under tremendous fire. Now, if you want to talk about doom and gloom for the church, that would have to be one of the times that where you'd point to, because it was very doomy and gloomy. It was dark and dim. There wasn't much hope in those days for Christians who were just hanging on by their fingernails, trying to live and trying to be witnesses, because Caesar, the emperor of Rome, had made our faith his enemy. And how in the world are we supposed to stand? I mean, the Roman Empire conquered many other huge and powerful empires in the day, and the whole known world pretty much was dominated by Rome. How in the world was this little fledgling group of people who thought Jesus was Lord, how in the world were we supposed to stand in the face of Rome, of that? Now, if you were a Christian living in, let's say, 65 AD in Rome, and you were hunkered down, fearful for your life, fearful that your faith was going to cause you to pay the ultimate price, if someone would have told you that just in a matter of time, if someone had told you that Rome would eventually become the capital of Christianity, would you have believed it? If somebody had come to you and told you that one day there would be crosses on the tops of buildings all across Rome, crosses that would proclaim to the world that Jesus, not Caesar, was Lord, would you have believed that? I mean, you're about to be killed for your faith and it seems like you're surrounded. Would you have believed that one day that same emperor, Nero, would be a distant memory, and instead there would be the church spread across all the world? Would you believe that? But it's true. God didn't stop when he raised Jesus from the dead. Easter wasn't over. God's resurrection power had been unleashed on the world. And in the first century, you can see evidence of that, because God blessed this church and sustained it through the darkest of times, the darkest of hours, and even conquered the empire that had been so antagonistic to our faith for 300 years. And that empire was conquered. So, now where is the Pope located? Rome. Where is St. Peter's Basilica? Rome. Where's the Vatican, which is the headquarters of the largest Christian denomination in the world? Right there in Rome, that used to be the place where Caesar declared to the world that he was Lord. And now, there's evidence all around that that wasn't true. The thing that stood the test of time was not the Roman Empire, but rather the church. And now people all over the world name their children Peter and James and John. I bet there in this room right now, there are some Matthews and some Marks and some Lukes. Do you know any Neros? You know anybody named Nero? Do you know anybody who named their child Diocletian? And he was another emperor that persecuted Christians. I don't know any. I've never met a Diocletian. Ever. I've never met anybody named Caesar, although I hear the Dog Whisperer is named that on TV. But people don't name their children Caesar or Roman or Nero or Diocletian. Not usually. Most of the time, those names are reserved for what? Pets. People name their dogs Nero. Now, if you had told a first century Christian in 65 AD that one day people would name their pets after this guy named Nero and their children after Peter, James, and John, do you think they would have believed you? No. But God was at work. God's love was unstoppable. And this church that God formed in the very beginning, God sustained through time. And all this is on my mind because of our scripture lesson this morning. Just a review, go back to verse 4. This is what John says. For whatever is born of God conquers the world. And this is the victory that conquers the world, our faith. Our faith, this faith that we have in common, the faith that says that Jesus Christ and not Caesar and not the president and not the Senate and not anybody else, no prime ministers, that Jesus Christ is Lord and nobody else. That faith, that is the faith that conquers the world. Then in verse 5, John continues, who is it that conquers the world? But the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. For whatever is born of God conquers the world, and this is the victory that conquers the world, our faith. The faith that God reached into a tomb in Jerusalem in the first century and brought out of that death and darkness, brought forth light and life. That's the faith that conquers the world. This faith in Easter, that resurrection changes everything. That is the faith. Who conquers the world? The one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. It reminds me of another time where Jesus said to Peter, "Peter, you are the rock, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." This church, this love that's embodied within this people called church, this love, this people is unstoppable. And just like last week, we said that Easter means that we can trust love, that love is powerful, that love is always going to win. And this week's passage reinforces that. Our faith, the faith that conquers the world, our faith that proclaims Jesus Christ crucified and resurrected, will conquer the entire world. But not conquer the way some people might think of conquering. This faith, this love, is not going to conquer the world the way the Romans conquered the world. I mean, the Romans were powerful. They could come out against any nation and any people with guns blazing. Well, they didn't have guns, but they could come out with spears blazing. And they could crush anybody, the whole known world. That's the way Rome conquered. That's not the way the faith conquers. No doubt this week you saw on the news things going on in Dallas and the people who were shot trying to charge an event. And then shortly after that incident, the group ISIS, you know about ISIS, you've heard about them in the news for months in Iraq and Syria, you know the momentum they're gaining and the people they're recruiting. Well, ISIS issued a statement that they have 71 trained soldiers in 15 states in the United States ready to attack any target at their command. And it's a little unnerving because ISIS's stated goal is to conquer the world. That's what they say they want to do. They want to conquer the world. Now, of course, their plan to conquer the world is they want to do that by force. They're recruiting people and they're amassing weapons because when they talk about conquering the world, their plan is to do that by violence and by political power. Notice that's not the way 1 John talks about conquering the world. When John talks about conquering the world, when Jesus talks about conquering the world, he's talking about conquering through love. In John 13, Jesus says, "I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another." And Jesus loved his disciples completely, wholeheartedly, self-sacrificially. That's the kind of love. He gave his life for his disciples. And he said, "Just as I have loved you, so you should also love one another. And by this, everybody's going to know you're one of my disciples, if you have love for one another." Jesus' command to his disciples was to love each other. Jesus' command was for his disciples to love their neighbors. Jesus' command was for his disciples to love their enemies, to love those who persecuted them, who spoke evil against them, who hated them and reviled them. Jesus said, essentially, Jesus says, love everybody, and that love is a force more powerful than any army. That love is more powerful than any violence. That love will conquer the world. Love is powerful, and it cannot be stopped. Love conquers all. Just ask the Romans. Well, you can't. The empire's no longer around. But the church is. There's a pastor out in Colorado who tells a story about going to Turkey. And she and her group were touring Turkey. And they went to these caves in Turkey where it was obvious Christians had worshipped centuries ago. There were etchings in the cave walls, and it was obvious that these caves were at one time places of worship for Christians. And she was there standing in the cave in a country where really there aren't too many churches anymore. There are not that many Christians. It's a place that's predominantly Muslim. And she thought about what the church that used to meet in those caves must have thought when they could tell that their numbers were dwindling. They could tell that their church was dying. She wondered what that group might have thought, what they might have felt. And then she and her group decided that since there hadn't been Christian worship in those caves in a long time, they decided to sing the doxology together in those caves. And as the doxology resonated off the cave walls and there was signs of life and worship in that place, she contemplated the fact that even though Christians don't meet in that cave anymore to worship, and even though there aren't as many Christians in Turkey as there once were, the church is still very much alive and well. And the fact that they were standing there singing the doxology was proof that the church, God's love embodied in a people, cannot be stopped because Easter has changed everything. And that resurrection power has been unleashed in us, on us, and through us. Well, I started off today by telling you about all the doomsday prophets. And these are people who are Christians. They're from within the church, talking about how all this doom and gloom, the church is dying, it's becoming irrelevant. There are even some who have predicted that the last United Methodist will turn out the lights in the last United Methodist church by the year 2075. That's the prediction. And I would say to you that all those doomers and gloomers, they must have forgotten about Easter. And they must have forgotten that Easter changes everything, that God raised Jesus from the dead and nothing will ever be the same. Easter means love wins. Easter means victory for the church. Easter means the church cannot be stopped. Love can't be stopped. The good news of Jesus will never be stopped. So as long as we stay committed to the mission of Jesus to make disciples of all nations, as long as we stay committed to live as He lived and love as He loved, we don't have to worry about the church dying. The same God who created the church will sustain the church. And we'll just have to worry about keeping up with what God is doing in the world. So no matter what darkness is going on in your lives, no matter how much doom and gloom you might feel, know that light and love wins. The love of Jesus can't be stopped. In this church, you, the living embodiment of love, you can conquer the world. Amen.